This is Bob Fitrakis bringing you the other side of the news on WGRN 94.1. We'll be back with Jonathan Beard, the other side of the Franklin County Democratic Party.
Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
Jonathan, welcome to the other side of the news.
Good to be here. Thank you, Bob.
And we're going to be on a little earlier, but you had to go to a demonstration. What were you out demonstrating about?
Well, we were out with a group of folks who were trying to press on our senator, Senator Portman, the need for COVID relief, and the need for the Senate to get off its ass, get back down to Washington and do something for the American people. So we're pushing for the Senate to adopt the HEROES Act or come somewhere reasonably close.
Well, what does the HEROES Act call for?
HEROES Act is a pretty comprehensive bill. I won't know all the parts. Kind of the big piece right now is it funds the Postal Service, which is, you know, has to do with our elections. So that's a big piece. it retains a $600 per week unemployment, federal unemployment extender. Provides for a variety of other release for real people in America.
Yeah, Donald Trump and the Postal Service, interesting topic. What's your take on that, Jonathan?
Just one more level of corruption. I mean, there is no bottom with this guy. It's just, I mean, he is messing with an institution that predated the United States Constitution. You know, he's messing with, you know, Ben Franklin was America's first postmaster, you know, and Ben Franklin is sometimes called the father of democracy. And, you know, here's Donald Trump trying to use the post office for political gain. Post office is probably the government agency with the highest approval rating. You know, nobody.
91%.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it serves everybody all across the country.
And there's a mainstay in rural America, right? And
yeah,
particularly the delivery of drugs in areas where even in Ohio, most people don't have access to health care. They live more than 50 miles away often from pharmacies and in clinics. It's the Postal Service that's bringing them their medication.
But you know what? This kind of fits with Donald's practice of going after seniors, going after the, you know, the elderly and the dependent. So not only was he going to, you know, through his payroll tax deferral, which is not a cut, through his payroll tax deferral, set in the process of defunding Social Security. Now he's taking away the ability of seniors who are big absentee ballot voters and mail-in voters, taking away their ability to cast a vote in this election. So this is just more of the same.
Here in the Columbus area, we do the Free Press, which I edit, and you're involved in advisory board, and helped us expand back before the pandemic. Had removed 9 sorting machines. There were 49, and they had removed 9 sorting machines for first class mail, which is what the ballot is. What do you do when something's this blatant? What's your take?
I keep saying to re-impeach. I think, you know, the House can impeach.
Yeah.
They've got 76 days to make the case before the American public about the continuing abuses of this president, the continuing assaults against our Constitution, against democracy. And now you actually have a Senate Intelligence Committee report, which affirmed what Robert Mueller said. So there's, you know, you can present the same information twice. There's no double jeopardy in an impeachment case. It's not a criminal. Present the same information again before the American people, and you know, this isn't, I think, an area where this isn't a time of in the nation's history where you go back to the old norms, which is trying to keep partisan politics out of the election day or whatever the case may be, you know, trying to behave or trying to you know, not use the House for political advantage. This is a presidency that threatens the very existence of the republic. And you go after it with both barrels. And I just say the House should be using its impeachment powers now to re-impeach and give Donald something really special. He always wants to be the biggest and the best, the only president to be impeached 2 times.
And I hate I hate to bring this up, but did you guys go to the same school?
Oh, see, now you went there. I didn't get somebody.
But you went to class. You went to class and did your homework. And you specifically didn't go to the business school, did you?
No, I didn't go to the business school. And apparently neither did he, really. But when I was there, he used to come and speak on campus a lot. And there were always these rumors floating around that they just rebuilt the business school. It's called Steinberg-Dietrich Hall. And there were all these rumors floating around that Donald Trump was going to drop a big boatload of money on Penn, and it would be renamed the Trump Hall. You know, we all know that foundation was, that was a myth. But that was a rumor when I was in school.
Ah, and probably a consistent rumor. Well, you're an active member of the Democratic Party, and that, do you still hold the Central Committee seat?
No, I don't. I don't.
Okay, but for a while there, I mean, yeah. I had that same seat.
That's right.
A decade or two prior to you.
Yeah.
In 92, I was at the Democratic Convention that year. Instead of protesting, I was one of Governor Brown's platform people. I was running against John Kasich, who apparently is now in the party briefly here. And it's sort of, what do you think of the convention? Are they doing what they need to do? How do you feel when you're watching it in terms of, I mean, they're taking on Donald Trump. Are they doing it correct?
I like what they're doing. I think they are using the scripted ability of, you know, being able to produce something and script it. And this is, you know, the left Hollywood liberal elites that I think have put together a real good package for the American people. You know, one of the things.
So you're admitting that Hollyweird and the liberal progressives, PDA, Progressive Dems of America, are in fact influential in the Democratic Party.
They control the Democratic Party and the whole United States of America. As a matter of fact, some of them are Satan-worshipping, child-eating pedophiliacs, I understand.
Who like pizza?
No. That's right. but only in the bank. Yeah. But I'm liking what I've seen with the party and the way they've done this convention. You know, it was kind of worrying that nobody would be there, and, you know, what if you give a party and nobody comes? But I really think the ability to do film and to script it out is more in keeping with who we are as Americans these days. You know, we don't have that long attention span, but they give it to us in 3 to 5 minute increments, and we can hang with that. I think the messages have been consistent, and I think they've done a real good job of introducing Joe Biden, talking about him, and preempting some of the attacks that are sure to come. Same thing with Kamala. So again, introducing them as people, because really this election is about Donald Trump. Okay. I think you have to have voters know something about the people that Donald Trump is running about, because they stand in such such opposition to what he is.
So yeah, I've seen the polls. Potted plant 63, Trump 37.
So, yeah, and I actually love the roll call vote. I love the roll call across
America.
Oh,
did you?
I did. I thought. And then
I thought that was the one part that was actually much better than at the convention itself.
Yeah.
There seemed to be a fair amount of independence in terms of the approaches that were taken.
That's right. I think it was Alabama where they got real. But, you know, the ability to tell stories on TV, it was fantastic. You know, little Estella last night, whose father was a Marine, but whose mother got deported under, the Trump's DACA reversal. I mean, that's, you know, how could you not feel that story? And how could you not understand what's at stake for people?
So what'd you think? It looks like they kept the big dog on the porch, Bill Clinton.
Yeah, you know, I wish they put him on the back porch, honestly.
Yeah, they gave him 5 minutes. You'd let him out to do his business on the back porch, and that would have been it.
You know, it's time to move forward. I guess, you know, you've got to give a nod to them.
Don't you believe in the third way, the New Democrats, the DLC, the Democratic Leadership Council? Are you saying we should move away from that model?
But here's the other thing that bringing Bill did, okay? Donald Trump will not have a living ex-president at his convention, okay? You know, Joe Biden had two, so, you know.
And I'm thinking if George Herbert Walker Bush were still alive, he would have had a three.
Not a chance.
Yeah, he would. I'm thinking he might have showed up as a Dem. Trump wins by insulting, right, his son.
Right, right.
His whole tactic.
His son who should have been the Republican nominee, who everybody thought would be the Republican nominee.
The good son.
That's right.
Jeb, right? The one they actually groomed to be president.
That's right.
Not the accident.
This is The Other Side of the News, streaming to you from the Indie Media Studios of the Free Press Network on YouTube, but also available online at WGRN.org. Plus, listen to us on Columbus, Ohio's two volunteer-run low-power FM radio stations, Friday at 5:30 p.m. on 94.1 FM, The Green Renaissance, and rebroadcasted Mondays at 4:30 p.m. on WCRS, the community radio station, both 92.7 and 98.3 FM.
I loved President Obama's bit last night. I think he led into the Donald and tore him a new one, and that was well-deserved. And I think he had the gravitas and in terms of talking about the threat to the Republic that Trump poses, I think he did that very well.
Well, you may have the gravitas to do some of that here in Columbus. Dems here? You guys are going to all come together, right, and get rid of Trump. And, you know, I'm with you on this one. But what about locally? Does the party here look a little more like Bill Clinton's New Democrats, or are they moving in a progressive way?
The party here is to the right of Bill Clinton. It's these folks are here because big business wants them here, not because voters want them here. Hell, we can't even find somebody to run against the incumbent mayor. And that's happened twice in the last 10 years.
Yeah, so. I apologize. I really should have run because while I don't think I would have won, but I think I could have got a 35 to 40% rock solid new policy without much money because Ginther is the local potted plant.
Well, and they've lined up the next one behind him with the Shannon Harden. Again, who I think it's 28 years old when he assumed the council presidency.
And it wasn't because he was connected. It wasn't because of his mother.
Who worked for Coleman.
Michael Coleman.
Basically,
but Michael Coleman, did a good job. Here's what I always think. Like Michael Coleman, it's not like he covered up for Les Wexner when he was building New Albany with Jeffrey Epstein. And an obscure attorney, it's a success story, an obscure attorney who said when the bribery came down to Jerry Hammond and, to get that water and sewage out to New Albany for $500 million, because poor people in Columbus should pay for the rich to have their little community that's, perfect. There was one lawyer who came forward and did the work to defend Les Wexner, obscure guy over at Schottenstein, Zox and Dunn that went on to be a three-term mayor. And here's the story I'll offer you. I was on a plane to Chicago. I was going to speak at Rainbow Push. And we get there and he goes, well, you can get a ride with me. So I hop in this car, he's got a limo. And I notice he's heading the wrong direction. I said, are you going to Rainbow Push on the south side? He goes, no, I'm going to the DLC.
Going to the DLC?
Yeah, literally, I was on a plane with him. So so you're saying that the Democratic Party, even though it's in power, doesn't exert the leadership or the policies you would prefer?
I don't know. I mean, we've got guys that trip over themselves to do the bidding of the wealthiest in this community. You know, we can start with the tax abatements because everybody knows, you know, what a racket that is.
Well, but, you know, your neighborhood, right, the richest arena. People aren't paying any taxes, right? The 50%, 15-year tax right. abatement.
That's right. And, our neighborhood.
And, yes, our neighborhood. And your property values will go up and you'll pay more taxes. Because you don't know.
Well, then, I mean, you got a city council that can find well over $100 million for a soccer stadium. When we had we had the nation's first soccer stadium already up and built, it was doing just fine. But no, the bigwigs want it downtown so they can build some more stuff around it, make more money. And we were able to find $100 million after saying we would spend less than, I think it was $50 million.
Yeah.
That's what they can spend. And I mean, that happened about 3 weeks.
And that's real money now that with the pandemic and the lack of sales tax and bed tax and other things that help.
Well, if you talk about $50 million, I think it was last spring. Didn't we vote a $50 million bond package for affordable housing?
We did.
That money is not on the streets, and they've got no plan to do so. And the priorities here are just, you know, I mean, you know what's happening with the rents here. It's absolutely crazy. You can't get a one-bedroom apartment for less than, you know, $1,100.
Yeah. This is one of my concerns. I walk the neighborhood a lot, but I'm seeing a lot of furniture and mattresses. I mean, there's people being evicted, and the city doesn't even seem to be able to handle the bulk pickup, the basic services. And what's happening to these people? You know, I mean, the sheriff's throwing them out, but where are they going to go?
Whitehall. They won't be in Columbus. They won't be in Columbus because they can't afford Columbus anymore.
Is it a deliberate policy? I mean, we're seeing it the same way with gentrification and pricing people out. Is it a deliberate policy? Do they know what they're doing? I mean, they have to with the taxes, right?
I absolutely think so. So I'll tell you a story, which is about Franklin Park Trolley Barn. So I used to run a nonprofit corporation here on the Near East Side. And we saw the Franklin Park Trolley Barn, which is a historic building built in the 1880s. It housed Columbus streetcars. It's been dilapidated, decaying for the last 20 years. It's vacant, been in environment court for 7 years. And, we saw it and saw, well, this would be a great opportunity, great place to build community around. So rather than being a blighting influence, let's make this a gem of the neighborhood. And we started, you know, talking about it, got with the property owner and got serious options that could be extended. So we got site control over the property, started working with the neighborhood and moving through the environmental court process. It had been environmental court for 7 years at the time, but you know, with no action taken by the city. So the neighborhood said, you know, let's push this thing along and help this transaction happen. And it was Judge Hale at the time who was the character.
Harlan Hale.
So I remember Harlan Hale, yep. So there's a Mayor Coleman's former deputy chief of staff who became a development director. Boy Safford was on my board of directors. And so, you know, we'd gone through neighborhood charrettes and come together with a performer. And, you know, we were at the board meeting saying, you know, should we go forward with this and talk about it. And the board said, yes, let's go forward. And Boyce pulled me aside after the meeting and said, you need to run this by the mayor's office. You know, let him know what you're doing. And he said, make it a big number. And, you know, what the hell, you know, schedule a meeting, talking about the project. So I called up and talked to Mike Sexton in the mayor's neighborhood affairs office. And scheduled a meeting, and you know, it's just we didn't have to ask. It was just a, you know, this is what's going on type meeting. And as I walked in at that meeting date, Mike was walking out, and he told me to meet with Shannon Harden instead, because Shannon was in the mayor's office. So, you know, what the hell? Went through it, did my little PowerPoint, left him the package, and it was, you know, in our mind, it was a $9.2 million project. To me, that's a big number. And that's the number I gave him, because that was the real number for us. And I walked out. Didn't hear anything back from the mayor's office. It was okay because we didn't ask for anything. But the next, about 3 weeks later, there was a hearing in environmental court. And city attorney Rick Pfeiffer walked up to the assistant city attorney who was sitting at the table, whispered something in her ear, and then he walked out. And when the hearing started, she stood up and said, "Your Honor, the city's changed its position. We no longer want a court-appointed receiver to handle the property. Instead, we want fines of $1,000 a day to accrue to the city." There were no liens against the property before that, no mortgage or anything like that. So the city was putting itself in a position to have financial interest. And I should mention, when I walked into the courtroom, I walked in with the Franklin Park Area Association. And former Judge Mark Froelich was there. And Judge Froelich ran the Columbus Urban Growth Corporation, which is a nonprofit city development arm. And he stood up and waved me, told me to come over. And I went over, "Hey, Mark, how you doing?" He said, "Hey, John, how you doing?" And he had a brand new file folder in his lap that said Franklin Park Trolley Barn. He said, "I'm about to be appointed the receiver today. I understand you've got an option on the property and look forward to working with you again." And so the city attorney said her piece and said, "We don't want a court-appointed receiver anymore." And Judge Hale went off. I don't know if I can cuss on the air, but you know, "What the F is this? We've been walking down this path for so many months. It's like the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. You know, we've been going down this path in good faith. Now you come with this bullshit." I mean, he's just cussing up a storm in the thing. He said, "But at the end of the day, you know, you're the plaintiff," is the wrong word, "but you're the plaintiff, city's the plaintiff. So what you want, the fines of $1,000 a day." But he said, "I'm retaining jurisdiction. We'll have another hearing in 30 days. And so, you know, 30 days went by. The city had a $30,000 lien on the property. And we went back into court. And we're sitting there waiting for the hearing to begin. And the bailiff comes out and says, "Is there Jonathan Beard here?" I've raised my hand. That's me. He comes over and says, "The judge has asked you to come back to chambers." And so I don't know anything about this, so I go back there. And Judge Hale is sitting back there with the city attorney and the attorney for the property owner. And he's cussing up a storm again. You know, "What the F is this?" And what had happened is the city had come in with a new appraisal that was two or three times the value of the appraisal that we had given the court to justify, you know, the value of our option on the land. And, you know, he's cussing up the storm. "Who the fuck told you to do this? Nobody told you to come in with this. You know, we're all set to go. Now here you come in with this." And he's just cussing up a storm and mad as could be. And apparently he needed me back there. We had Bob Weiler's group do our appraisal. And he told me he needed me back there so all the Weilers and have them officially release him the number or something like that. So he got on the phone, called the Weiler group, and they confirmed the appraisal. But again, it's the city seeing a nonprofit coming in, and they inserted themselves into it. Now, fast forward about, you know, then the Great Recession hit, and, you know, the housing market went crashing. The property owner now knew there was an appraisal that, you know, 2 to 3 times the amount of our appraisal. So she said, "I'm not going to extend the option with you, and, you know, there's more money I can make out here." So we end up letting it go, and a guy named Brad DeHays with Connect Realty ended up with an interest in the property. I thought he bought it, but he really hadn't bought it. So then I'm sitting in my Franklin Park Area Associated Civic Association meeting one day because Franklin Park Trolley Bond was on the agenda. And Brad walks in and he starts a story saying, "You know, we didn't know anything about this property, but I got a call from Shannon Harden on behalf of the mayor's office asking me to look into this property." And so they have a $30 million project, where ours was $9.2 million. They doubled the number of apartments we were going to put there, you know, made some other changes, spent a whole lot more money. And then they got, about a year ago, they got a special kind of tax abatement, a 30-year tax abatement that involves some sort of authority, and Mike Coleman is their lawyer. It's just, it's like, Jesus Christ, you know, we took it into Coleman's office. They stole it. They, you know, launched the city attorney against us, basically stole it from us, pushed us out of the way. And then on the back end, when he leaves the mayor's office, he's representing them as a private attorney. So, revolving, whatever the case may be. But yeah,
well, what next? You're going to be dating Wexner's nanny or something?
You know, Bob, what I really think is you know, they liked the compact when we were doing the onesie twosie projects. Then we owned about 3 blocks on the south side of Main Street, and that was the first time they started fighting us. And then with the trolley barn, I think there are certain pieces of real estate they say are too valuable or there's too much.
And too much money to be made.
Yeah, there was
private, already wealthy individuals.
That's right. I read a Columbus Monthly article maybe 20, 25 years ago. It talked about how different Columbus was in that they're rich. Columbus's rich are much more invested in local real estate than the rich in other communities. I just think that's part and parcel of it.
Oh, absolutely true of the Wolf family. They had banking and property investments everywhere. And there's famous quote from Les Wexner, where in one interview, he says, well, you know, when he was invited to be one of the Titans, a lot of that was where the expressway exchanges were going to be. You're not supposed to talk openly about craft and fixing things to make you richer.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you, you know, they say we have representation. We've got a majority Black city council now. And when I moved here, I think.
Which has given Black people power?
Bob, how do you even say that? But I think what they figured out through the Mike Coleman experience is that Black folk are more eager to please the rich than white folk are. They know we don't have the money to run for these citywide elections on council, right? Can't raise the money. They know, you know, they know to get 4,000 votes out of Linden at most, so they count votes, and they know, you know, they'll get in with white money and white votes, and they'll be owned. And, you know,
but they'll personally get ahead. We should throw that in.
Absolutely.
So very prominent Black families have done quite well for themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. And pass it on to the next generation.
So we got 2 minutes left. What do you want to tell our listeners?
Well, let me go back a little bit and say we've got this at-large city council system. At-large means every city council member is elected in a citywide election, which is an incredibly rare form of government because of the Voting
Rights Act. Brought to you by racists who were worried about ethnic and different racial groups coming into the city and having power.
Exactly.
In the progressive era.
Now, so that was back in the progressive era. That's right. So you took us back to 1914. Fast forward, 1965, Voting Rights Act passed, and it cast a huge cloud of suspicion over at-large elections. Because the concept in the Voting Rights Act is that if they're geographically concentrated minorities, they should have the power, the electoral power, to elect candidates of their own choosing without having their votes diluted by the majority.
All power to the people.
Yeah, yeah. So it's race neutral. So if it was a Black community with a white minority, the same would apply in reverse. So the way Columbus, so every other big city got out of the at-large business. Columbus maintained theirs, but the way they got around it is they appointed Black council members to seats. And so appointment after appointment after appointment. There has not been one Black Democrat elected since 1969 when Dr. James Roseman was elected. And that was when both parties were saying, we need to elect a Black person to the seat. So, you know, Black folks have been appointed. This is a legacy of Jim Crow right here in Columbus. And we could talk about the win-win agreement and you know, Brown versus the Board of Education later date. But
all right,
you know, Columbus has all the vestiges of segregation right here built into our system.
All right. Next show, we're going to talk about that. Appreciate your time, Jonathan Beard, my good friend.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate what you do.
Then hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.